Well, hello everybody, and welcome back to Cooking in Real Time after like 11 years was the last, okay, less than 11 years, but almost was the last time I made an episode of this podcast. But thanks to popular demand, I'm back. I mean, that's like five people, but I'm totally grateful to all of you who have been demanding it, especially Vicky. You've been great and persistent, and I really appreciate it. So yeah, here we are in this totally weird situation in which many more people are cooking for themselves day in and day out. And I don't know, maybe this will help if you're not in the habit of cooking, or who knows. The whole premise of cooking in real time, sorry for all the background noise, the microphone is like at my waist. The whole premise of cooking in real time is exactly what it sounds like. Like, I'm just going to cook and I'm going to talk and it's going to take as long as it takes. And the reason I do it this way is because I think learning timing is one of the most useful things you can learn in the kitchen. To feel like you're kind of maximizing your time is one of the things that will help you feel like a competent cook. And so while I'm cooking, I'll just sort of talk about why I'm making the decisions I'm making, especially in this situation, talk about many things you can substitute instead of what I'm doing right now, and hopefully it'll all work out. And I'm not going to edit this. My old podcast, I did go through and take out a lot of my, like, sniffing and lip-smacking and stuff, and I'm going to try not to bother with that, but I'm going to try and tone it down. Anyway, so thanks for bearing with me, and I hope this does sort of inspire some people or help some people, because I know that when I cook, I just feel a whole lot better. It's one of the best things I do in my day because I feel like it clears my mind in a way that other stuff I do during the day I really have to struggle with, like keeping my focus and things like this. But there's something about cooking dinner that it's great. You have to be making little decisions all along the way, but none of them are particularly high stakes. You know, it's just dinner. And in the end, you get something good to eat. And you've also practiced. You've added to your great lifetime store of practicing a given skill. So if you're sitting around at home and you don't feel like there's anything you can do, and you've read that Shakespeare wrote King Lear while he was under quarantine, or any of that stuff that makes you feel like you're not maximizing your time, cooking is a really good way to maximize your time. It's good for you in the short term, like I said. And in the long term, it's just a skill that'll get you through, you know? So about what I'm actually, enough preamble, and about what I'm going to cook right now. It's tricky, right? Because we all have a very set pantry we're working with because we're trying to minimize going out and shopping. You can't just be like, ooh, I'm hungry for whatever, and run out and get the ingredients. So I totally understand if what I'm presenting to you tonight is not anything you happen to have, but I will go through everything and talk about all the other things you could use instead. And this is fundamentally a really easy, straightforward thing. It might sound exotic to some people, but it's actually pretty familiar ingredients you'll probably have on hand. So I'm going to make some rice pilaf with some Indian spices. And then I'm going to make a little dal, which is really just, in this case, it's going to be yellow split peas with some Indian spices. And I'm winging it. And the reason I'm cooking Indian stuff, I am not Indian or really anything, but back in the day when I was teaching myself to cook, actually one of the most helpful cookbooks was when I was in, I was living in London and I had just graduated from college and I was super broke and we had to basically eat every single meal in. And my boyfriend at the time had a copy of a Madder Jaffrey cookbook. And we just cooked our way through that. And I learned so much about a given category of cooking and also about how to work with what you can afford and make substitutions and sort of work within set parameters. And I also, that period also taught me to sort of read a recipe, not so much for ingredients necessarily, but for technique. And one of the things about this Madder Jaffrey cookbook that I found really interesting was like so many of the recipes are like, make a ginger garlic, you know, the steps were all very similar. So what would seem like wildly diverse recipes were a very set process that once you broke that down and knew the process, it seemed much less intimidating. So you'd be like, oh, okay, this is another one that starts with a ginger garlic paste and maybe the proportion is a little gingery, more gingery than the other one or less, whatever. But the steps were all pretty much the same. So that's what I learned from cooking from a single cookbook for a very long time, which I found very, very helpful. And it's also, like I said, the reason going back to Indian food is kind of a fallback for me. So the other thing that made me want to cook this stuff is I did a freezer census the other day and went through and figured out all the weird stuff I happen to have. And one of the things I happen to have is frozen curry leaves, which, my God, how old are they? I hate to even, they're like a year old, poor things. So we'll add a lot of those. If you don't have curry leaves, I fully do not expect you to have curry leaves in your freezer. Do not worry about it. But, you know, the strangest thing can inspire your dinner. That's kind of the lesson there. Taking out some ghee, which I happen to have. Again, doesn't matter if you don't have ghee. As long as you have, like, regular oil, that's fine. Plenty of people cook that way all the time. I just found ghee way back in my fridge. What else needs to come out here? I'm going to add a tiny bit of tomato. Oh, I know what else was in the freezer that was, like, malingering little scraps. I had some, I'm getting out some frozen fruit for later. I had some little bits of coconut. Where'd they go? I found some mango pulp. That's nice. So I'll take that out. Oh, I see my coconuts. There we go. Okay, sorry for all the noise. So, one of the lessons, again, I have no idea how old this stuff is. Whatever, it's fine. Clearing it out. Let's see, I'm going to get out some... So we're going to have a little bit of rice with some little Indian spices in it, and then the split peas with various Indian spices and a little coconut. And I was also going to make some raita on the side, some yogurt, and... We still have some yogurt and a little bit of cucumber. Sorry about the noise. But as I'm rooting around in here, I'm finding some other things that need a little love. Maybe we'll have a tiny bit of cabbage on the side. All right. So the reason I'm getting everything out at the beginning, this is very good cooking protocol to make sure you actually still have all the things you thought you had, especially in a household with a lot of people. you can like check your stock in the morning, and then by the time you go to cook, you're like, oh my god, what happened to the whatever? Because some little rugrats came and ate it all or something. Or somebody else had a different idea for lunch. So it's good to do your stock at the very beginning. I took out the saddest, most wrinkly cucumber. That's okay. We'll give him a little rinse for later. Set him aside. So, what do we got here? My kitchen is not totally tidy. This is kind of why I've been talking so much, is as I've been going around, I've been kind of organizing the kitchen, because we have not been very diligent, I've got to say. I'm eating like random bread scraps. I'm wiping off the cutting board. Okay, so, rice. Honestly, I just bought some basmati rice, but I was so spooked at the process of going out grocery shopping that I just left all those groceries in the front room for a while because I don't feel like touching them again. So I'm going to use the less than ideal, this is not the best rice to use for this. For a pilaf, like the ideal dreamy pilaf is like, the goal is to have every little grain of rice like super fluffy and separate, and they're just like chunk, chunk, nothing sticks together. But we're just not going to have that kind. That's all right. It's fine. Maybe later this week, once my basmati rice has had time to recover from being out in the world, then I'll use the nice long grain rice. But right now, all I have is sort of short grain Japanese rice. Anyway, it's gonna be sticky. That's okay. I'm just gonna rinse it though, and give it a chance to, maybe I'll let it soak in some water. Actually, I am measuring out, this is my third of a cup measure. I'm measuring out a cup of rice. All right. Yeah, so the whole point of soaking rice and rinsing rice is to get all the kind of surface starch off of it. Brace yourself. There's a little water running noise. So the surface starch is what makes the rice stick together. And short grain rice is, for some reason, has a lot more, maybe, I don't know what the science is behind it, but short grain rice is stickier. So to sort of fix that, or, you know, cut that a little bit, I'm going to set the rice to soak. And when you do rinse rice or soak rice, you'll see, like, the water turns incredibly cloudy. So actually that has happened so dramatically with this rice. I'm just going to pour some fresh water on it. So back when I did this podcast 11 years ago, 2009, I was really trying to keep things under an hour. As you can see by my rambling, it will probably be more than an hour, but I'm in no hurry. And probably a lot of people listening are not either. It's nice to be in the kitchen. It's relaxing. All you have to do when you're in the kitchen is think about cooking and what you're doing in the kitchen at that moment. It is a great, consider it another mindfulness exercise or something like that. Now I am in the pantry and I am looking at what kind of spices I want to put in this rice. We'll have black peppercorns. What else have we got? I definitely want fennel, and I can't decide if I'm going to have the fennel in the dal or in the rice. Fennel has that beautiful, soft, really subtle, delicate flavor. Let's see, what else am I going to want? Cumin. Oh, got a lot of cumin here. Again, I'm pulling all these spices out. If you're like, never have those spices, what are you talking about? Don't worry about it. Once I'm done with this, I'll talk through what you can use instead and stuff like that. Well, what do you got? Oh, a little fenugreek. Huh. I feel like this is kind of my chance to use up all these weird things I have in my pantry that never get enough love. Oh, I have it. Hang on, I have asafoetida. Sorry, I feel like I'm humble bragging here with like, oh, what's this little thing in my pantry? Do not mean to rub it in at all. I'm just looking in like the shadowy corners. Oh, a little mustard seed. Okay. All right. That'll do. Oh, you know what? I'm even going to pull out cloves. I kind of hate cloves, but a couple. But they're always, like, you buy one little jar of cloves, and then they last for 10 years. So maybe here's a chance to use a couple of them. Okay. All right. So when I'm doing something that involves like lots of spices, I don't want to have the same spices in both things. So I basically want to figure out what I want in my rice versus what I want in my dal. And for my dal, I was kind of thinking, I don't know, maybe I'll do sort of basic things on the dal, like mustard seed and cumin, and then my rice can be like a little bit more exotic. So my rice, maybe I'll just do black peppercorns. Tough luck, cloves, you lost again. I'm gonna keep this simple. Black peppercorns and fennel for the rice. I love fennel, and especially, oh, if we have buttery rice, yum yum. If you don't have these things, it is fine. I think the goal here is just to have some nice buttery rice with a little onion, which is what I'm going to chop up now. One onion. Basically, yeah, I'm just going to tell you the technique for putting in the whole spices, and then it's totally up to you how little or much you want to deal with that, depending on what you have on hand. Let's see here. All right, I'm going to chop. I have these, I don't know how we ended up with these giant onions. So I have one very big yellow onion, and for the rice, I'm just going to use half of that. So you chop off. What I usually do is chop off both ends, like the stem end and the blossom end. Stem end is the one with all the little like pokey things sticking out, like little hairs looking things. Chop off those two things and then chop down the middle, and then you can peel off the outer layer very easily. I think probably on the cookinginrealtime.com site, I think there's a video still up of me chopping an onion if you need the coaching. I'll check it out when I upload this. All right, what I'm doing is I'm cutting pretty thin vertical slices. I think, actually, since I already started this way, I will continue. A lot of Indian recipes I have read have you doing half rings, so cutting horizontally down the onion. Strangely, these things do kind of matter a little bit. They matter a little bit in terms of how things taste, but also in the visual presentation. So, like, you know, there are some cuisines where, like, everything is cut on the bias, and if your stuff isn't cut on the bias, you finish the dish and you're kind of like, it's not quite, like, it tastes like what I think it should, but it doesn't look the way I think it should. Obviously, don't make yourself crazy over this kind of detail. Like, you have not failed if you don't cut your onions the right way, because there is no right way. But, you know, sometimes it's nice to do things the way they're told, and if I had not, out of pure habit, started slicing this onion vertically, I should have done it in half rings horizontally, because it just would have made the whole thing, like, look a little bit more like an Indian dish, or at least what I imagine it to be. I make zero claim to authenticity. All right, I'm getting out a pan. Is this a good one to do it in? Yes, sort of a mid-size. Actually, no, I'm going to save that for the doll. I have my heaviest bottom rice, heaviest bottom, like, saucepan. What are these things called? My God, I haven't had to talk about cooking in 11 years. You know, it's like a 2 or 3 quart pan with a lid, and it's a big, heavy, like, kind of like Le Creuset, but a different brand from ages ago. And having a heavy bottom gives you, like, if in doubt, if you think your rice is always flawed, and rice is kind of weird to cook. I know a lot of people have a hard time with it, and I might even screw it up tonight. But the heavier the pan, the more leeway you have. So I've got my half a huge onion sliced up. If you only have a small onion, slice the whole onion, whatever. I have that all sliced up. Again, the proportions here don't really matter that much. You want a little bit of onion, or a decent amount of onion, I should say. Now, I like my rice buttery, so I'm going to use ghee, because I have it in the fridge. Ghee is clarified butter, which basically means butter that has been cooked a tiny bit, just so that all the milk solids fall to the bottom in the pot, and then you pour off the clear part and leave all the solid stuff in the bottom of the pan. You can make ghee yourself, which is an awesome project for right now. Basically, just melt butter in a big, heavy bottom pan. Takes about, I don't know, you can do it in like 20 minutes, or you can let it cook for longer and let it be a little toastier tasting. It's up to you. I'm sure there are a million things on the internet that will give you more specific guidelines, but it's kind of nice. And then the nice thing about cooking, the reason people make ghee at all is because the milk solids are the things that spoil, and once you take those out, you have pure fat that's not going to go off unless you expose it to really high heat and it goes rancid. But just its average lifespan is massively prolonged, and you can keep a container of ghee in your fridge for a long time. You can also, of course, buy ghee, but beware when you go in. A lot will say vegetable ghee, and that just means I have no idea what they're making it out of, but it's not butter. It's just another solid cooking oil. Okay, so I've got my rice pot on the back burner here on pretty low heat, and I put a couple of tablespoons of ghee in there. If you're not using ghee, just pour in enough vegetable oil to sort of cover the bottom of the pot reasonably generously. You want a little some, you know, you want enough oil in there to get your onions started cooking, and then you're going to want to coat the rice in a little slick of fat as well. Okay, that's on. I'm going to let the butter melt for the ghee. And, right, oh, I can measure out my spices since we're waiting. One of these years I'm going to finally treat myself to one of those little Indian-style spice caddies where you keep everything, keep the most common stuff out so I don't have to get everything out of these jars every time. I'm doing like a, I don't know, couple teaspoons of whole black peppercorns, and I like fennel, so like scant tablespoon of fennel, and I'm just putting those together in a little bowl, like a little stainless steel ramekin thing, which is a great, we have a whole bunch in like all different sizes and things, and just helps you keep organized so you don't have to be measuring spices like as the pot is blazing hot and you're under stress and oh my god. Okay, that the ghee is still melting, so because this show is about timing, I don't want to stand around like there's other stuff I could be doing. What could I be doing while the ghee is melting? I could be setting aside spices for the dal. So let's do that. I got out another little ramekin, and I'm going to set aside like another scant tablespoon of cumin. I'm just sort of measuring stuff into the palm of my hand. Again, precision is not super necessary here. If you get into like really intense spices, then you know you want to be more precise. But for this, for something that's going to be tasting like cumin and mustard seed, there's plenty of leeway. So another like scant tablespoon of mustard seed. I might have to adjust that later once I see how much stuff I have in the pan. And we may as well. Let's see, that's something I needed to, should have tidied up before. Didn't take everything off the stove and now I have to move crap around, which is frustrating. It's best to start by clearing the decks in your kitchen completely. But anytime you have a little bit of downtime while you're cooking, take a minute, especially if you don't, if you're like, oh crap, what should I be doing right now? I don't even know. Use that time to tidy up a little bit, and while you're doing that, you will kind of reconnect with your cooking vision. I'm going to strain the rice so it's ready to put in the pot. It's like the third thing in this process, but we may as well let it start draining. So I have this handy dandy rice strainer thing. Which is like this little plastic bowl with small holes in the bottom of it. It's very nifty, but you don't need one. You could use like a finer mesh strainer also. The important thing is just that you can, I mean, and you don't even, for years, I didn't have anything like that, and I just like put the rice in a bowl and covered it with water and then tilted it very carefully and poured off the water and added more water and poured off the water and added more water. And then when I finally did need to strain it, I just sort of held my hand there and made sure the rice didn't fall out of the pot or out of the bowl. You know, not very refined, but it worked. Okay, so ghee is melted and kind of hot. Let's see. So what we want to do very first is we're going to tip our spices in to the hot fat. And this, they're in, and this gives them a chance for the flavors to kind of bloom fabulously. And we're stirring them around. They only need a few seconds. As soon as you can kind of smell them, that's enough. And you don't want it to go farther than that. Like right now, I can smell my ghee. And that's all I can smell. Butter. And then starting to get a tiny hint of fennel. I'm stirring around a lot. And the peppercorns are also turning a little bit light. You never want these things to go past and get burnt, or then you just have like essence of sort of bitter burn flavors. So if in doubt, if you're not sure, have it go for less time than more. All these spices are going to be in there together cooking with the rice, so don't, no need to push it. All right, I'm tipping my my onions in there now. And that's another reason, like, no need to push it with the spices, because, yeah, they're going to be in there with the onions. Got some sizzling happening. And you kind of want the onions to... Man, that's a lot of onions. That was a really big onion. Well, it's all going to cook down. It's going to be really oniony rice. That's its selling point. That's okay. I have this like 2 or 3 quart saucepan, and it's like half onions right now. Tiny miscalculation. That's okay. We just want the onions to get a little bit soft so they're not taking up half the saucepan. So, let's see. Now's the occasion for me to look around for the salt. Salt is your friend. I think novice cooks often don't use enough salt. You know, we've been told for years that salt is bad for you, but truly, as a home cook, like, you almost cannot add too much, like, you can never add the amount of salt that you would get in some weird commercial, you know, in Doritos or whatever. So, do not be shy. I mean, obviously, if you have high blood pressure that seems to be affected by a salty diet, then go easy on the salt. Most people do not have that. So, you know, feel free with the salt. So the salt, I just added a couple big pinches. I have it, I always buy kosher salt because it's flakier, and you can kind of, I feel like you can gauge it better. There's a lot more leeway in kosher salt, whereas like the normal Morton's fine crystal salt, like, it's, you can oversalt more easily, or I can because I'm not used to using it. So I just keep kosher salt out in another little ramekin by the stove, and I usually do a, like, what I call a pinch is grabbing what I can grab between a thumb and 3 fingers. A big pinch would be thumb and all 4 fingers. So I just did a couple thumb and 3 fingers kind of pinches. The salt adds flavor, of course, like brings out the flavor, but it also helps the onions soften up. So yeah, they weren't really capitulating until I added the salt. Salt helps like break down the cellular structure or something scientific like that. I don't really know. All right. That's looking good. Yeah, the onions are giving off a little bit of liquid. I don't know if you can hear, but they're They went from being like sizzle, 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 like dry sizzle, to now it's like this kind of steamy, simmery sound, because that's all the liquid has started to come out of the onions now that they're softening up. Learning to listen in the kitchen, in addition to timing, is a great skill. You want to know what things sound like while they're cooking, so you don't have to look at them all the time. Because if you're standing watching everything, you're not able to turn away and do other stuff, and it can really slow you down. But like right now, the noise that the onions are making, I can hear that sort of like slow, steamy sound. Like, I would feel confident to turn away and chop up the other half of the onion if I needed it, or chop up something else. It's not till it gets back to that dry frying sound that you're going to want to come back and really pay attention to it. So, but what we're doing now is we're getting the rice going. All right, I have my strained rice here, and I am scraping that into the into my pot with the onions. And I'm going to turn the heat up a little. I had it down on like medium low because I was walking around a bit. So I'm going to turn it up to medium high. The goal here at this stage is, like I said, you want to sort of coat all the rice in whatever cooking oil, you know, cooking oil or ghee or whatever fat you're using. Again, this is like in search of the goal of having the beautiful, each delicate grain of rice perfect and not sticking to its neighbor. That's not, like I said, that's not really going to happen with the kind of rice we're using. But we can try. We can try. So you can hear, you can probably hear the sound has changed. We're getting back to that kind of dry sizzling sound because the water that was on, once I turned up the heat, the water that was on the rice and the liquid from the onion kind of cooked away. So yeah, you can hear that like dry sound. So I would not turn my back on this at this point. I'm stirring and making sure that the rice doesn't get stuck. And when I'm doing this with basmati rice, you can actually see the color on the rice change, where each grain goes from being, I'm blanking now what it normally looks like, either starts out translucent and turns solid, or it's solid and turns translucent. I can't remember. This rice, this short grain rice, is kind of weird. And it's kind of splotchy, so I have no read on it as to whether I've cooked it enough, so I'm just going to say I've cooked it, it's fine. I also, since I never cooked this kind of rice, I'm not entirely sure how much water it takes. So I did one cup of rice, that's another cup of water. I'm going to do 1 1/3 cups of water. I can't remember how. We'll check on it later. I might have to add more water. Usually this kind of rice we just do in the rice cooker plain. So I am kind of winging it. Okay. Water's in. I'm scraping down all the little poor little grains of rice that got stuck on the side of the pot. Scraping them down and making sure they're underwater. And turning the heat all the way down to just about as low as it can go. Putting the lid on. Great. Progress. I feel like I've been talking for like an hour, which is not a great selling point for how important it is to do your timing in the kitchen. But anyway, what else are we going to be doing right about now? Who knows? So, onto the doll. What I was saying before about, like, reading recipes for technique rather than ingredients is kind of what I'm doing right now. I have a copy of this cookbook, Vibrant India, by Chitra Agrawal. It came out a couple of years ago, which is all vegetarians, mostly South Indian. And she has a recipe in here for creamy yellow lentils with tomato and ginger. And I'm like, great, I have creamy yellow split peas, which aren't exactly yellow lentils. And I have tomato and ginger. So I'm kind of skimming that. And I'm like, ooh, I don't have any green chilies. Oh, you know what I do have, though? We do have, just now remembering, we do have some Thai chilies in the freezer, which are incredibly hot. But since we have them, I'm going to pull out a couple. If you don't have any, you don't have any. That's fine. It's nice to have, it kind of is nice to have like a little fresh green chili heat. But if you don't have it, it's all right. So I just cut out a teeny bit of, like two little tiny Thai bird's eye green chilies. So we'll throw those in. I'm just sort of skimming this recipe, yeah, to see what I have. She calls for ghee, black mustard seeds, hing. Let's see, red onion. We don't have red onion or shallot. Well, we have shallots, but we do have shallots, but I already chopped this onion in half, so I'm going to use this onion that we have. I have tomato. I have some leftover. I have like half a can of canned tomatoes, so I'm going to use a little bit of that. Cilantro we have. She's not calling for coconut, but since I have it, and she's not calling for curry leaves, but since I have it, I'm going to throw those in. So that's kind of, you know, playing very fast and loose with the ingredients here. And, but the key thing I'm reading for here is to see how does she prepare the dal first. Like, is she starting with, like all my other recipes, with like a ginger garlic paste, or is she cooking the dal separately and then seasoning it? And I am happy to do a cooking the dal first and seasoning it strategy because it buys me some time. Let me see. Indeed. Oh, that's nice. I was reading too fast, and I think she does call for curry leaves. Cool. All right, so yeah, she has us cooking the dal plain and then seasoning it. So let's do that. It doesn't require quite so much concentration or prep. I always feel better once things are on the heat and cooking a little bit. It's like, okay, things are in motion. We'll eat sometime, as opposed to there's a whole other school of like super mise en place where like everything is chopped and everything is grated and everything is whatevered before you even turn on the stove. And that is deadly. That's like how people cook in restaurants because they have a battalion of people to do all that for them. And the whole goal of restaurant cooking is to sort of assemble everything at once when it's been ordered. And that's not really what you're doing at home. So, and it's usually only you in the kitchen. So what we're gonna do is, okay, this is interesting. She says dry roast the dal in a saucepan over medium heat until they are golden brown and have a nutty aroma. This step is optional, but reduces the stickiness of the dal. I so appreciate it when recipes tell you why you're supposed to do a given thing. If she hadn't said that, I would be like, I'm not doing that. But since she mentioned it, maybe I will do it. And like I said, we have nothing but time. So I have about a cup of yellow split peas, which have been in my pantry for who knows how long. I said I was going to talk about substitutions. You could be doing this with beans, which have become incredibly popular now. You could be doing this with plain brown lentils. You could be doing it with those little pink lentils, which are just brown lentils with the skin taken off, FYI. You could be doing it with, I don't know what, sorry, that weird, like, clunky noise is me trying to get the very last, there it goes, the very last little split pea out of the jar. Oh, there's one more. I'm very finicky about cleaning all my things just because I don't like wasting, but the more you clean any given container, like, the less you have to wash it later. So, I don't want those, I don't want whole little split peas, like, clogging up my sink drain later. They may as well go in the pot. Anyway, okay, so I have them in another pot, like, saucepan-y kind of thing that I was going to do the rice in, but this one has more, like, sloping sides, and it's just easier for, like, shooshing things around. You can hear me. I have the burner on high, and I have these lentils and or the split peas in this pan, and I'm just sort of swooshing them around. I've lifted the pan up so it's not in contact with the burner. That might just be too much work, and I'm not going to do it that way the whole time, but it's fun. I'm going to turn my back on that for a second. This is how things go terribly wrong. But I'm going to get my other stuff together while that is just heating up. Okay, I've got my whole spices that she was asking for that, which are cumin and mustard seed. Or she said mustard seed at least. That's for later. I'm putting away other stuff. I'm putting away my fennel and my black pepper. Again, like, whenever you find yourself waiting for a minute, just tidy up however much you can. Clean as you go, clean as you go. What else do we have here? Oh, she suggested hing asafoetida, which is, I don't even know what it is, and I think I've had the same container of it for like 15 years. I keep it inside another glass jar because the flavor, it's like a resin. The smell of it is intense. It like gets, it's one of those things that like gets up in the back of your nose. I'm using it because the recipe calls for it and I happen to have it. Do you need it? No, you don't need it. Let's see. Oh, ginger. Yes. Oh, and the onion. My God. Except in all my dithering, now I'm too nervous to leave this pan unmonitored. So I'm back at the stove. I'm back sort of swirling those things around. They're just dry in the pan. This is the thing she said to toast them so they're not as sticky. And since she explained why I'm doing it, especially because I've cooked these yellow split peas before, and you know, they're like green split peas, like the kind of, like the peas that you make pea soup out of, the kind where if you like leave it to sit, it turns into a solid mass. So if there is something that makes these slightly less goopy, I'm definitely up for trying it. It's also kind of good to stir these all around. I probably should have rinsed them now that I think about it. And they are starting to turn color. And I think we're gonna, yeah, that's it. All right, I'm putting some water in the container I had. There we go. pouring some water on there. I did not measure the amount of water. Once in Morocco, a woman I took a cooking class with was like, oh, you always want like 2 knuckles depth of water on beans and lentils. So that's kind of what I'm going to go for. And if these end up like soupier than that, well, then we have kind of... All right. So yeah, I'm sticking my water. I'm sticking my finger in here. It's getting a little hot. So yeah, from the top of the little split peas up, I have about 1.5. You know, the water comes up to just above the first joint on my finger, or midway between the first and second joint on my finger. I'm going to drizzle in a little bit more. Can always add more later. Smells very toasty. I think toasting those was... We'll see how goopy they are in the end. I think it probably added a little flavor. All right, so I've turned the heat on these. I put the lid on. I turned the heat on the lentil or the split peas. I don't know why I keep saying lentils. I've turned it down to pretty close to low. So they're just going to simmer, and we're going to get everything else ready. All right, so we got the sort of wet stuff together for this. I'm going to slice up this other onion. And I'm just going to skim her recipe again, because this isn't exactly what I'm used to doing. Yeah, normally I would be sort of blitzing ginger and garlic together and onion, since we have it, and sort of frying that in a pan and then mixing that in with the split peas. But I'm curious how she is doing this. Oh, very important to read here. She says to add the curry leaves and the ginger and the chilies and the turmeric to the split peas as they're cooking. So why don't we do that, since she has us doing that? These poor... So what are curry leaves? She says like 1 sprig of curry leaves. These have been in my freezer for a year. They probably have no flavor. So I'm going to add a little bit. There's a sprig. I'm going to add a second sprig. Poor things. I was so excited when I saw them at the store and then brought them home and put them in the freezer and forgot about them. And I'm going to throw those 2 little Thai chilies in there with the peas. What else does she say? Oh, the ginger peeled and grated. Oh, interesting. Okay, I'll do that. Seems kind of... not too fussy. It's just a 1-inch chunk of ginger, peeled and grated. Give that a wash. I just chopped off a chunk. If you don't have ginger, that's okay. The nice thing about cooking like beans and lentils and things like that is like they fundamentally taste great. So, or I think they do. So you don't actually have to do a whole project to fancy them up. I mean, I have been known to like scoop plain salted lentils out of the pan and be like, these are delicious. So maybe I'm just a sucker. But it's just nice to know when you're working off a base that tastes fundamentally good and you don't have to do a whole lot of other fussiness. All right, I'm not narrating very well, is I was just sort of slicing all the peel off the ginger. She says to grate it, which automatically makes my the knuckles on my... makes my knuckles cringe. I have my little microplane grater. I think I would... Oh, I've never used my microplane grater for this. Not sure how psyched I am about this. Well... Alright, so there's some very, very soft ginger pulp in there. Which, yeah, I'm getting too nervous about my knuckles to keep doing that. What I'm going to do with the rest of that chunk of ginger, which was a very generous chunk of ginger, is I'm going to cut it into little thin coins. And those can go in... the way, that way, just big chunky slices. All right. Oh, and some turmeric, she said. So, fun fact, turmeric got super popular and everybody's like into turmeric. Apparently, turmeric's, whatever it's supposed to be good for you, and honestly, I don't know, it's just generally good for you, but the goodness of it is activated by, or is enhanced, I believe, by black pepper, which I just love those kind of things of like, oh, science says this happens. And it's like, yeah, yeah, we know we've been eating it that way the entire time. Like, you really just need to look at traditional foods to see how you should be eating, because people have been eating for thousands of years and they've figured a lot of the stuff out, even though they haven't put fancy names to it. One of the key things about that, about traditional diets, and part of the reason I'm cooking rice with the split peas, is all about combining proteins, which I learned about when I was a vegetarian in high school, which was kind of a short-lived experiment. But it's the idea of there are amino acids in certain kinds of foods that complement amino acids in other kinds of foods. Put them together, you have essentially like a whole complete protein. So like beans and grains together form a complete protein. So that's why, like, everybody eats beans and rice together. Grain and dairy makes a complete protein, which is why mac and cheese is so awesome. And what's the other? I believe legumes and seeds are the other combination. Grain and legumes, grain and dairy, and legumes and seeds. And if you look up combining proteins on the internet, you'll get a whole bunch of like debunked things about combining proteins. And all the debunking really is basically saying like you don't have to combine these things in a single meal. I think that used to be the prescription. And as long as you eat like a varied diet over the course of the day, if you have like rice for lunch and beans for dinner, you're fine. But why not have rice and beans together? Like, why? I don't understand the anger in the debunking that comes out on the internet about combining proteins, because you have to figure out what to cook for dinner and you may as well cook a complete protein for dinner. You know, why would you not do it if you could? Part of the challenge of cooking dinner is deciding what the hell to cook for dinner in the first place. And, following the combining proteins logic is a really good way of sort of focusing your decision-making process. Anyway, what was I doing while I was talking about the whole thing? I think I was just tidying up again. I'm putting the rest of the curry leaves back in the freezer. Or things. probably try cooking something else with them later. And let's see. Okay, so where are we? Oh, the speaking of combining proteins, actually, I'm going to lay it on a little thick, and I'm going to make a little... we're going to have a little dairy with this as well. So just to be thorough. So I'm opening a little container of yogurt there. And I'm going to make a very basic cucumber raita, which is just yogurt. Raita is a whole category of yogurt-based things. And this is just going to be yogurt and cucumber and salt and a little cumin. And some lemon juice or lime juice if I can find it in the fridge. So I'm just going to get that set while we're waiting for the lentils to cook. So I'm just cooking for two. So I'm doing like three big old spoonfuls of yogurt because I really like yogurt. We've been getting this Bulgarian yogurt called Trimona, which is so good. And we get it from the Greek store, and I kind of laugh because the labeling on it, it says, "Let the Greeks have their philosophers, leave the yogurt to us." And I don't know if the Greeks at the Greek store know or have realized that the Bulgarians are trying to start a fight with them over yogurt. Anyway, it's really good. It's super sour and it's not strained, but it's nice and kind of solid set. Anyway, tastes like the yogurt you get in Greece, ironically. So we have our bowl of yogurt, and I'm going to grab my little salt thing and put a couple, or like 1.5 pinches of salt. It's amazing how good just salt and yogurt is, I find it super satisfying. You don't even need to add salt and yogurt. And garlic is super delicious. What is sizzling over here, guys? What is making noise on the stove? Oh, the rice is making a strange sizzling sound. Maybe this is how I discover it. I didn't put in enough water. Let's see. I am very gently reaching into the rice with a spoon and tapping down to the bottom of the pan to see if stuff got stuck. It hasn't really, but there's not really any water left in there. Still kind of crunchy. I'm going to add a tiny bit more water. I'm adding like another 1/4 cup of water, which is probably the thing that'll make it hopelessly gummy, but whatever. All right. Oh, good. Okay, I was worried my lentil or my split peas were not making any noise, and I was like, oh, what if they're not cooking? They're fine. All right, so I put salt in the yogurt. Oh, I'm going to do a little... Where'd my poor little cucumber go? Cucumbers and yogurt are, like, made for each other. Peeling with my cucumber. I had rinsed, I can't remember if I did this while I had the microphone on, I rinsed the cucumber first. But of course, since you're peeling it, you don't necessarily need to rinse it, but it just seems like a good idea. All right, so I chopped the little ends off the cucumber. I want these slices of cucumber. I think I want like tiny little dice. You could also do like very thin slices. You don't want like big whole mouthfuls of cucumber. So this is just kind of a side relishy thing. So what I'm doing is I cut the cucumber in half lengthwise, so I have a flat surface, and now I'm cutting lengthwise very thin slices and holding it all together, and then I'm cutting across in small bits and the cucumber just sticks to the knife, so I'm periodically just sliding all the cucumber off the knife into a little bowl. Oh, what the heck, whole cucumber. What is the good of having a little cucumber half lying around? And I already peeled it, so it would just get all dried up. Okay. And you can tell from the sound of my chopping has sped up and my precision is going out the window. So like the first half of the cucumber was like, oh, tiny little dainty slices. Now they're getting bigger. Okay, it's fine. These are still, you know, like 1/8 inch little smidgy pieces. This thing is smelling strange over here at the stove. Did I mention that? You want to train not just your ears, but your nose as well. All right, things are fine. Things are fine. I'm just checking. Things aren't accidentally burning. The rice smells really nice and buttery, so that's success. Okay, we want... Oh, how stupid of me. I did not put the yogurt in a big enough bowl. I don't know what I was thinking. Okay, scraping the yogurt into the other bowl. Although I secretly am happy because then I can kind of lick the extra out of this bowl. No, I guess I won't lick it. Never mind. It's kind of gross to lick the spoon in the middle. It's a nice thing about cooking for yourself, though. If you want to lick the spoon in the middle, you can. It's only your own germs. If you're cooking for other people you don't know very well, that's a bad practice. Okay. All right. Yogurt is in a more suitable bowl, and I'm just stirring in the cucumber. We've already put in salt. So the proportion here, this is still fundamentally a yogurt thing. This is not like cucumbers coated in yogurt. Like if you took a spoon full of it, it's like 50-50 yogurt cucumbers. Maybe even 60% yogurt, 40% cucumbers. You want it a little, like, liquidy. All right, and I'm going to put in a pinch of cumin. Not too much, because we have cumin set aside to go in the split peas, so I don't want, like, cumin everywhere. But cumin and cucumbers is good. So I'm just putting, like, not even half a teaspoon, maybe 1/4 teaspoon of cucumber in there. And, oh great, I'm going to grind some pepper. And, oh, I thought I was going to look for citrus, I think. We had half a
women head up.
Oh. Hmm. Well, I'm looking here in the fridge and I'm seeing we also have carrots, which is another thing. If I weren't lazy, I would grate another great part of a carrot in here. I also know Peter doesn't like raw carrots, so I'm not going to do it. But it's something you could do. If you only have carrots and you don't have cucumbers, actually yogurt and carrot is very good. And then the whole thing turns kind of, turns a little bit orange, which is fun. Yogurt and beet is delicious, super delicious. You can just grate raw beet a little bit and like just grate it over the yogurt and grate the shreds right in, and everything turns crazy hot pink, which is really fun. What else can you put in a raita? Yeah, basically any kind of firm little vegetable would be good. All right, I did find a little lime in the bottom of the fridge, so I will give it a little squirt. If you have good sour yogurt, that in itself is fine, and you don't necessarily need anything. You can get by without adding extra citrus. But since I have it, and that poor little lime was getting all withered, so let it be of service. All right, so I've got half a lime that I'm just going to set aside in a little bowl for some other adventure. I'm going to stir this all up. The extra lime juice does make the whole thing much more liquidy, which is good. I will taste this a little bit. Mmm, yum. Mmm. It's like so appetizing. Just makes the sour is great and it gets your salivary glands going, and the cumin is so appetizing. Okay. Let's see how soft our split peas are getting. They look like they're gonna still need a little while longer. You know, I could read the recipe and see how long they expect them to take. That's the thing about, it's so hard to tell. Beans, lentils, these split peas, everything takes a different time, and also so much depends on how old things are. So if you have dried beans, if you're cooking dried beans that were harvested in like September, October, they're going to cook up super quick. But if you have dried beans that have been on a grocery store shelf for like a year and were like harvested in the fall of 2018, they're going to take longer because they're like gradually losing all their moisture. But if you're just shopping at a regular grocery store, it's really hard to tell. Sometimes I'm fussy and I like look at the expiration dates and, you know, try to get the newest ones. But most of the time, it's just not worth fighting, and you just have to kind of cook and poke and cook and poke and see how they're doing. Part of the reason I'm cooking this recipe, this is like use all the weird stuff, is I have had a jar of yellow split peas in the fridge or in the pantry since, I wonder if I dated these. Oh, this isn't bad. Oh my God. They're from, July 2019. Jeez. Positively bursting with freshness. Okay. So that means that maybe they'll be done soon. Who knows? Let's see. So I'm back and I'm looking at her recipe again here just to see what else. Oh, yeah, I'm reading the head notes and she says some versions include a couple tablespoons of shredded coconut. So I'm not crazy for wanting to add that because I found it in my freezer. But obviously if you don't have it, you don't have to do it. Let's see. Oh, she says you can also add different vegetables, like zucchini, winter squash, greens like spinach. Ooh, I have frozen spinach. Maybe I will do that. One of the things that helps me decide what I'm going to cook is I try to think about the colors and the textures, like combining proteins fundamentally, and that's pretty easy to, you know, narrow down your categories a little bit. But then I don't cook vegetarian all the time, so it's not always a big factor. But once that's kind of narrowed down, then I think about color and texture. And part of the reason I'm having the raita on the side, the yogurt and cucumbers, is not just because I like the taste of yogurt and cucumbers and I like how it goes with rice, but to have something that is cold. The other things are going to be hot. This is a cold thing. And something that's going to be crunchy, because the split peas are just going to be mush and the rice is going to be kind of soft. So the raita, the cucumbers and the raita give a nice little crunch. Or not a crunch, but a little something else. But since I'm talking about texture, and I did find this poor little nub of cabbage in the fridge, I think we'll add, and we have the half a lime, I think I will add a tiny little bit of raw cabbage salad. Which, raw cabbage salad, I'm sure I like featured it in like probably half the recipes in the old version of this podcast from 10 years ago. Because it's like the easiest backup, like, oh, when in doubt, just have a little cabbage on the side. Because the amazing thing about cabbage as a salad, okay, you might have heard me slice a little bit, and that was me slicing the maybe just a tiny bit of mold starting. I just cut off the surface edge of this cabbage and tossed it. Now I am very finely slicing the rest of the cabbage. And it takes a little tipping it this way and that to get an even surface to lay it on. Cabbage is one of those things where you're like, God, I hardly have any. And then you slice it and it turns into this, it like multiplies massively. So I truly had like a piece of cabbage that was not even as big as my fist. And now I'm like, oh, that's a nice little side salad for two people. Like a little side garnish. And you can like put a real vinaigrette on. I'm eating the largest piece of cabbage that didn't get sliced very thin. You could put like a proper vinaigrette, but just oil and vinegar or oil and lemon juice is super delicious. I'm just putting on the oil now. If you put on the citrus too soon, then the whole thing starts getting limp. So I'm gonna squeeze that other half of lime over just at the end. But that's all sliced up and ready to go. Let's see what else. All right, where was I? Reading her recipe. Since I've gone down this route of cooking the doll her way, I guess I can't really switch horses in midstream. So I'm reading her technique here. We got the dal till it's all soft and mashy. Then she has a separate thing with the hot ghee and spices. And some more curry leaves. And then fry the onion with those. So basically you're creating... this is kind of what I would have done, plus the ginger and garlic in that mix. Basically, you're creating this like intense flavor combo that you're then going to mix in with the kind of bland lentils or yellow split peas in this case. Again, we're going to do what we did with the rice spices, where we heat up the fat and then put the spices in the hot fat and then add the other stuff to cook with it. I'm just seeing what else. Oh, a clove of garlic minced. We do have that, so I'll do it. Yeah, a lot of cooking comes down to, do I have time to do this? Yes, because the split peas the last time I looked were not soft enough. So yes, there will be garlic in this. Because how else will I pass the time? I should have been describing what I was doing, sorry. I take a clove of garlic and put the flat of my knife against it and smash, and then smash a second time. That is what separates the men from the boys, as they say. When you smash a second time, you're also smashing the garlic itself, so the skin slips off pretty easily, and then you have this clove of garlic that's like already kind of crunched into a couple of pieces, so you can cut across it and it automatically falls into more pieces, if that makes any sense. Again, you don't have to be precise at all. This is another like bone I have to pick with restaurant cooking, is like everybody gets trained in restaurants to cook in, or to slice things like incredibly consistently and carefully into like perfect little dice and stuff. You don't really have to do that. The joy of cooking at home is you don't have to be consistent. All restaurants do is cook for consistency, and because you don't want somebody being like, oh, that dish was so much better the first time I had it because so-and-so back in the kitchen had a specific way of doing it. The whole point of the restaurant is having all sort of interchangeable labor and parts. But at home, you know, you can cook it one way. One time you can cook it with really big chunks of garlic, and the next time you can chop that garlic up fine. It is entirely up to you. I should not be speaking ill of restaurants in the current situation. I feel bad. They definitely have their place. I just sort of rant against them because I feel like nowadays people end up learning how to cook from restaurants, and you end up picking up a lot of stuff you don't have to pick up. Like, home cooking is its own thing. And I want more people to know all the corners they can cut when they're cooking at home. Alright, I've got some garlic chopped up here, and I've got this other half of the onion, that giant onion I chopped up for the rice. So this time, for variety, I am cutting it into little super thin half rings. So that's nice. They're gonna like poke out of the soupy split peas in a more interesting looking way. They're not going to be all droopy. I'm going to have these nice sort of onion curls instead. I did read something in Cook's Illustrated like 20 years ago about how like cutting the onion in different directions releases different things and cells and da 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 da. Again, I don't know how much it affects the flavor truly, but it does, you know, affect the look of the thing, and that is not always, you know, you don't want to cook entirely around how things look, but it's worth taking into consideration. God, this is a lot, but there's no sense saving a little smidge of onion. Because you don't want those things sitting around the fridge. Alright, the only problem with doing half rings of onions is slicing the very end of it is always nerve-wracking. I'm kind of holding my thumb on one side of the onion and my fingers on the other and slicing in between. It's dubious. Super thin slice onions are not worth cutting myself for. Alright. Okay, those onions are in a little bowl. Scoop the garlic into another little bowl. You don't want to put them in the same bowl because typically the onion will take... You want the onion to cook for a while and then add the garlic later. If you put them in together, the garlic will get too cooked and maybe burnt by the time you've got the onions where you want them. So you want to keep those separate. Or if you're, you know, pinched for bowls or space to save things, put the garlic in the bottom and the onion on top of it. All right, so my cutting board is semi-clean. Things are smelling over here. I am looking at the split peas to see how they're doing, if they're softening up at all. They're such a great, like, the split peas are yellow anyway, and then I added the turmeric, and it's such a great, gorgeous color. It's very exciting. Let me check the rice, which is also smelling strange. It's gotta be soft now. Yeah, those are good. All right, I'm going to turn off the rice. I'm going to do a little trick that a Turkish guy I met a long time ago taught me. He did this with newspaper. I'm just doing it with, like, a dry, clean towel, where you've got the rice. The burner is turned off. I have taken the lid off, and I have draped a towel across the top of the pot, and then I'm putting the lid back on. So the lid is like holding the towel in place. And what that's gonna do is gonna absorb the extra moisture that's in the rice and maybe help it be a little bit fluffier. If you've ever had Turkish rice and wonder, like, Turks are among the world's masters of pilaf. And that is their secret trick, apparently. Now, in the name of tidying up, I'm eating some weird little bread end. Excuse me. All right, what can we do while we're waiting for the split peas? I guess what we can do is we can go ahead and cook the... sort of flavor part of the split pea recipe. So I've got a wide flat skillet, relatively thin bottom. You could use, this one's stainless steel, you could use a cast iron skillet, although I think I'm choosing not to do that because I want to see the color of the spices more easily. And when you use a cast iron skillet, it's hard to tell against the black background how, you know, whether your spices are changing color and stuff. And I'm also going to add some tomato, and tomato does not react very well with cast iron. Honestly, like, the short amount of time I'm cooking it, this would probably make zero difference in cast iron. It would be fine. But since I happen to have this big stainless skillet, I'll use it. So we're laying on the ghee again here. Again, you could use, I've got like a very big tablespoon. Again, you can use plain vegetable oil. I would not use olive oil, although I have used it sometimes. Olive oil does have a pretty distinctive taste that is like a little confusing. It doesn't taste bad, but you'll be like, something about this doesn't entirely remind me of like a good Indian doll, and that's because it's olive oil from an entirely different part of the world. But, you know, if that's all you have, it's all you have, it's fine. And it's totally okay to use that. All right, I'm melting. I have the heat on, like, medium. And I am doing a little mental rundown of all the stuff we need. So we're going to do like we did with the rice, where we heat up the ghee and put in the whole spices and then the onions. And then this little flavor bomb thing we're making is going to have more stuff. It's going to have the garlic. It's going to have the hing, which you don't need. I just have it in my pantry. We're going to have a little tomato and the coconut powder. And I'm just scanning her little description of what she likes to do. So, yeah, if I had not started following her recipe, I think what I would have done is blitzed all the garlic, ginger, and onion together in the blender with a little bit of water until you have this paste. And then you can put your hot spices in, and then you put all that mixture into the hot oil and fry it until the liquid cooks away and it sort of browns up and cooks everything. And then add your coconut and your tomato. So that's an option. That is an option. Although if you're actually following me, we're in too deep. We're doing what we're doing. All right, the ghee is hot. You can see it's like a little shimmery on the surface, and you can smell it. And I am pouring in like a tablespoon of cumin and a tablespoon of black mustard seeds, which we measured out back when I was dealing with all the spices. And do I put the hing in here? I think I do put the hing in the hot oil. So I'll do that. I think hing is supposed to be really good for digestion. I think that's why they put it in. It's hilarious. It really takes like two tiny, tiny little shakes. And then that's why I've had the same thing for 15 years. But it still has this weird, intense flavor or smell after all that time. All right. I can totally smell the cumin. It smells great. They're popping a little bit. I don't know if you can hear it. And the mustard seeds, they turn gray and they can really start to pop. Okay. And if you don't have mustard seeds, that's okay. I've never used yellow mustard seeds instead of black mustard seeds, but presumably you could. I don't know what would happen. I just added the onions. That's why we've got all this, like, super sizzle going on. And I'm going to add salt to this. My hands are wet, so I'm just sort of shaking it in. And you can sort of extra salt because it's going into the lentil or the split peas, which haven't been salted at all, so it's okay. They'll sort of dilute the salt. All right, this is nice. The onions do really like turn limp faster when they're cut into these half rings. It's interesting to see the difference. Almost side by side. Sorry for the like tinky tink noise. I just ended up using like normal kitchen, you know, eating spoon instead of my wooden spoon. Here's my wooden spoon. Okay. That's better. Easier on the ears. All right. My onions have gotten pretty limp and soft, so I'm going to put in my garlic. Kind of stir that around. Still got my... Yeah, I would say this is on medium heat still. All right, my sink now is like nothing but tiny little stainless steel bowls. It's a little chaotic. But it's fine, they're all in the sink. It's contained. I'm putting the hing back in its way weird corner in the pantry. Putting away all the other spices. That's because let me see, can you hear it? It's, my onions have that, like, steamy sound and not the hot, sizzly sound, so I know I can leave them alone. So we're kind of waiting for the liquid to cook off them a little bit. Cinnamon, I didn't use cinnamon. My mom says cinnamon is a good antiviral. Sort of to help your body repel, this, not kill virus, but to keep it from adhering to you. I don't know. My mom is, I should add, this is not coming from nowhere. My mother is a trained herbal medicine practitioner. I'm not just like spouting totally nutso things I heard on Facebook. But I'm also not saying you should be, like, eating tons of cinnamon, because I think it does other weird things to you. So, I just was more making a mental note to self. All right, so our onions starting to turn toward the hot, sizzly sound. Okay, but I still have some time. Put the ghee away. Tomato. That's going to be the other thing. Oh, and the coconut. Alright, the coconut, I'm just dumping in about, I don't know, I'm dumping in what I have, and it is probably a third of a cup of grated coconut. Premium quality coconut powder produced in Sri Lanka and probably purchased like 2 years ago. It's been in the freezer the whole time. Obviously, you don't want to use that sweetened grated coconut that you get in the baking aisle. It's not what you want. That smells so good. I love coconut. If you hate coconut, obviously, leave it out. I know some people personally who cannot abide coconut. I'm just throwing the bag away there. And I'm stirring this pretty vigorously because I don't want the coconut to get stuck in any one spot and burn. But I do want it to get a little toasty flavor and maybe, you know, cook off some of the freezer flavor. I'm not saying it has, but it might have. Anyway, this is a pretty dry mixture right now. It's like we got our mustard seed and our cumin and our onion and our garlic. And my helpful producer, Peter Moskos, has come in and is now taking bites of the raita, which is one of the problems of making things ahead of time. but can you take pictures of things too? Oh my god, he's eating whole spoonfuls! It'll never last! Anyway, I'm gonna ask Peter to take some pictures so you can kind of see what stuff looks like, since my narration skills are a little rusty, let's just say. In my own little world. Will you take a picture of sink full of stainless steel bowls? Did you get a picture of the steam protective thing on the rice? Oh, very nice. Very nice. Alright, and while we're talking about that, my coconut was getting kind of stuck here, and it's smelling very coconutty, So I don't want it to burn. So I'm going to add, this is probably like half a can of, small can of tomatoes, and I'm only going to use half of that. I don't want a ton of, I'm really just adding the tomatoes, like, just for a little brightness, a little acidity. I don't want it to be a tomato dish. Maybe I'm using more like 2/3 of what's in this bowl here. All right, that'll do. Oh, and I was gonna add spinach. I feel like that was a train of thought I didn't totally finish. I have frozen spinach, and I'm gonna turn the heat off on that onion, tomato, coconut spice mixture, so I don't have to worry about it. And I'm gonna dig around for spinach. Where'd it go? Let me consult my freezer census. Is it in this freezer? We have another freezer in the basement, which is potential for much confusion. I think it's in this one. Oh, there we are. Oh, great. It's not one of those blocks. It's a bag. Let's pour out some of it. Oh, nice. Okay. Perfect. Frozen cut leaf spinach. Obviously, if you don't have it, you don't need to add it. I'm just adding it because, what the heck, like I said, you want variety of color and texture and whatever. And nice to have a little extra green in this whole mix. If the cabbage is not very green, and the raita, the cucumber is not, it's kind of white. So yeah, please have some real green. I'm tipping, I don't know, like a cup and a half of frozen spinach into a bowl. You can use more or less depending on what you're hungry for. There's a whole spectrum of proportions of greens and beans. Greens and legumes. So that is entirely up to you. Bring that back in the freezer. Alright, now we are looking at let's see how soft the... Oh, yes. Perfect. Okay, great. Now the split peas are all nice and soft. The water trick with the finger worked out pretty well. I am taking out the curry leaves, or the easy to grab curry leaves anyway. And I'm taking out the whole green chilies, and I'm going to take out those rounds of ginger I put in because they're sitting right here, and it's easier for me to do it now when it's on my plate and I really want to eat. Not getting everyone, I don't think. I'm just grabbing the ones that are easy to see. All right. Oh, and there's one more of those ginger coins. Maybe they might taste great. I'm going to leave a couple in. Who knows? All right. I am stirring and stirring, and I'm going to get a better spoon for mashing these up a bit. So I'm just kind of squishing the split peas up against the side of the pot. And this is pretty liquidy. It's like, it's a soup. It is not a thick thing. It will thicken up because split peas are very starchy and will definitely, like, if there's any of this left and I reheat it tomorrow, it's going to be solid in the container. But then again, we toasted it, like she said to do, so maybe it won't goop up so much. Anyway, it looks really nice. I'm just taking the spoon and I'm pressing, squishing things up against the side of the pot to kind of squash up the peas. So some of them are going to be mashy and some of them are going to be whole. Again, all in the name of variety. Like, you don't want dinner to be dreary and all one texture or color if you can avoid it. And this is an easy way to have some variety. So right now this is pretty runny, but we're going to add, now we're going to add this mix of the tomatoes and onions and coconut and spices and garlic. Scraping all that in. Again, scraping the pan as clean as I can possibly get it without going horribly compulsive. But again, makes it easier to clean later. And I'm making sure to scrape the brown bits off the bottom of the pan. That's where the flavor is. All right, so that's in, and I'm stirring that stuff in, so things are getting thicker right there. Ooh, looking so nice. Great, so there's just enough tomato that there's like little pops of red. All right, and now, ooh, I almost don't want to ruin that with spinach. Let me taste. Yeah, it needs more salt. Yeah, it's that's the thing about beans and stuff. All the legumes just like drink salt. It's really hard to oversalt them. And I added salt to the onions, but I didn't add anything to the split peas while they were cooking, so plenty of room. Yum, yum, yum. Okay. Oh, that's really good. But I'm not so attached to it that we can't add the spinach. I'm tipping in the frozen spinach, and it's really just going to need a few minutes to, like, defrost and cook through. And, yeah, now we have something. Now we have a mix that's, like, pretty thick. I mean, it doesn't like hold its shape, but it's not a soup anymore. Oh, it looks so nice. So nice. Yeah, the green is beautiful. Okay. All right, spinach. I'm glad I put you in. All right, putting the lid on, and I'm going to keep that on super low, just enough to cook the spinach. And we're going to use this time while the spinach is doing its thing to do a last bit of tidying up. I threw away the stuff that I fished out, the curry leaves and the whatchamacallit, those big chunks of ginger. Threw those away. There it is. Finding the lid for the tomatoes that I still haven't used all. Amazing how many things you can put a little dab of tomatoes in. All right, those are going back in the fridge. Oh, we will use this time to squeeze the other half of the lime on the, forgetting my words, oh my God, on the cabbage salad. Yeah, it's a good thing dinner is pretty much done because my concentration has totally gotten shot and I feel like we're losing quality here rapidly. Dinner can't come soon enough. All right. Really all you need for the cabbage, I'm telling you, is oil and vinegar or citrus and salt and pepper. And I'm putting salt on now. My fingers are all wet. So, washing my hand again. Okay. Pepper. And the great thing is, that's like the loudest pepper mill in all the world. The great thing about this cabbage salad is that, like, it goes with so many different things. Like, we often have it on the side with Greek food. But it's also gonna go great with our little, Indian-ish stuff. It's like a really standard winter salad in Greece is cabbage and sometimes, grated carrot and oil and vinegar. And yeah, it's great. You get like crunchy, raw. It makes even sort of drab winter food feel a little livelier. Anyway, and I do have carrots in the fridge, but I'm not going to use them tonight. So, all right, our cabbage salad's done. Our raita is done, slightly decimated by our earlier visitor. And let's check on our rice that has been getting all fluffy under its towel. And so the rice is cool. It has all the whole spices have popped up to the top. You can do this rice with, you can use this basic rice recipe technique. It's not even really a recipe. With the whole spices, you can do any kind of spices. Kind of a really common combination, I would say, is cinnamon, a little bit of a few cloves, and cumin, I guess. What else would you put in there? All the sort of warm spices can go in together. And of course, black pepper. So if you wanted to take it in a more like classical warm spice direction. All right, this rice is not, cannot be served to anybody who knows about real pilaf. They would laugh. But it's rice and it tastes kind of nice and soft and fennelly and kind of mellow oniony and very important, buttery. So that is its whole goal in life and it has attained that. Never mind about the little fluffy greens. We'll do some basmati things sometime in the future. And we'll do it right. Okay, so that's done. And now I'm stirring our little yellow split peas. And it's looking like the... Oh my god, yum. The spinach is all defrosted. And it's blended in there. We are ready to eat. Thank you so much. Again, thank you to the people who encouraged me to do this. It was really fun. Not only is cooking a nice way to clear your brain, but cooking and narrating the whole thing while you're doing it is a really good way to clear your brain. I haven't been thinking about anything but this for the past however long it's been. So thanks for listening along. I hope this helps you a little bit. I will do what I have done with the podcast in the past, where I'll put it up on the website along with something close to a recipe so you can be a little prepared before you listen if you want to be. And send me feedback if you have it. The website feedback doesn't really work. You can reach me on Twitter at Zora, Z-O-R-A. You could write to me at, you could email me. The email that's on the website does work. You can find me on Facebook under my full name, Zora O'Neill. Instagram, Zora.O'Neill, all that stuff. I am easy to find and easy to make contact with. So, and I'd love to hear from you. Especially, my God, if you have stuff that in your pantry right now that you're like, how the hell am I supposed to cook with this? What do I make out of these last four things I have? I love that kind of cooking, and I love answering those kind of questions. And I also love answering the question of, I like this recipe, but I only have X, Y, and Z, and I don't have the things that are in the recipe. Can I still make it? Almost always the answer is yes, and I'm so happy to, like, talk people through that kind of thing, because it's so empowering to be able to read a recipe and take what you need out of it and, like, bend it to your will. Oh, I just realized the split peas are still on. Turning the heat off while I rant. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. I hope this helps you. And yeah, be in touch and enjoy your dinner. Thank you. Bye.